This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. You are listening to Love in the 21st Century on every Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m. hosted by Adam Mose and Tamara Wickma tonight. Love in the 21st Century is a talk show with live call-ins, interviews, and discussions on the philosophical to practical look of love, from romantic relationships to connections with humanity. One-third dating insights, one-third self-love guide, one-third compassion training. And tonight, we will be talking about love and creativity. So stay tuned, be a part of the conversation by dialing 895-1114. That number will get you directly on the air. So 895-1114. Stay tuned for a thoughtful and meaningful conversation on love and creativity. Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by one of Chico's newest restaurants, Rallo's West, at 234 West 3rd Street in the heart of downtown. Rallo's West offers small and large plates, Maryland-style shrimp, blue crab cakes, a wine bar, charcuterie, and artisanal cheeses. Rallo's West is open from 5 till 9 p.m. until 10 on Friday and Saturday. For more information, visit them on Facebook or by calling 636-4468. Welcome back, folks, or welcome to Love in the 21st Century, talking about love and creativity. Myself, Tamara Wickma, and Adam Mose. Thank you so much, Adam, for being here.
Oh, I'm so happy and grateful to be here and to share it with you.
Fantastic. And all of our amazing listeners out there in the world.
And you, and you, and you, and you.
And you. Awesome.
Can be loved and creative, too. It's not really anything you need to do. Just open up and let it flow through.
A nice little rhyme to begin our conversation here on love and creativity.
Yeah, this is an interesting topic. It takes me, in a way, kind of like, you know, I think, oh, again, why should I be an expert? You know, why am I talking about it? But it's just something wonderful that we want to just open the conversation and say, you know, how is it that we can be more creative in the life? And that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, oh, I'm a great artist. I have to be producing all of this and that kind of cultural artifacts. In fact, they say, like, there's a saying, you know, I'm always saying, like, I come from the Buddhist perspective. They say how people who are really clever, they can fashion the world. They can change the world, you know. If you're really clever, you can make the world conform to some of the ideas you have for it. But people who are really wise, they fashion themselves. So, like the idea of being creative, it might not show up as anything in particular, but like how it is you're living in the world, how it is you're relating, if that is an expression of your creativity, you know, then that might even be the highest form. We can't say, oh, I come back with the thing that would shut me down about being creative is feeling judged. And the idea of being loved is a space free of judgment, just appreciated for who you are, what you are. And being free of self-judgment, that was just like the most amazing revelation, you know, first to discover how much I was judging myself all the time. And then to think, you know, is that really necessary? Is that really such a... is it an essential factor? Not really. So, it fits in with so much we've been discussing before, you know, the idea of self-love, and then you're less judging on yourself, then you open up to a more relaxed way of being and seeing. Like, real creativity is like changing how you see things, being able to see things from a different angle. Like they say, oh, how an artist looks at the world. You know, we think that's a creative person. And I kept thinking, here is a revelation I had when I was laying brick. I was working, you know, in construction. I was doing manual labor, kind of construction, bricklaying in Berkeley. And I was thinking to myself, wow, the art forms keep getting more and more immersive. You know, we have CinemaScope and then 3D movies and then Smell-O-Vision, and then it keeps getting, you know, now virtual reality. You can step into a 3D environment and start painting in space, and it sticks, you know, create your little 3D world. And I thought, nothing would beat this, though. Like, what we're in now is so immersive, we're so believing it, you know, and then we flip over into this idea of Matrix, you know, like, oh, this is a simulation, this is something we're co-creating, we're making. Where does it exist? Where does this ongoing experience reside? And then we have to say, oh, am I getting deep waters here? We're getting deep. you can hop in at any point here. I'm just going to keep on diving. So we're saying, where is all this happening? Where is all of this arising from? One's own state of awareness, your current thought, your current mind, your current perception is where it's arising. So the world we share, we were talking about this also, is everyone's shared minds making this thing. So we're all co-creating. We can be creative with how we're co-creating this when we love one another. When you're open in your heart to be able to feel love and express it freely, then you're genuinely co-creating. And I know we're far past the spring, we're heading towards the fall, but again, just poetic and beautiful appreciation for that crazy, dizzying, heightened experience of falling in love. When you're falling in love, you suddenly see the other in such a perfect vision. Their best qualities, you know, their most perfect aspirations. And you're being seen in that same way. That's a great time to get creative, you know? Mm-hmm. That's how people turn around and recreate themselves.
When the energies are high and
the love is flowing.
Right. Seems all powerful and anything can be created.
That's right.
So I want to go back to something you said. What is smell-o-vision?
It was an experiment in cinematic experience. Well, like Disney does this, the Disney Corporation, there's like the flying above California ride in the California park, and you fly above the orange grove, and they spray a little orange mist into the theater, and it's like you feel like you're really there.
Oh, I've never experienced that. Smell-o-vision.
Our old buddy Justin Thompson, he's an artist and man about town in Chico. He left some years ago, but he did this little smell-o-vision experiment where we were like in this box and he'd project stuff and then squirt little essential oils in it. It was like a self-performance. Mm-hmm. You know, he would perform the box. You'd get in it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's really some immersive technology, you know, low tech. It's a box, and he's squirting things, and he's projecting things on it. But it was fun.
Nice. Sounds like quite the experience. And yeah, like you said, I think we got quickly into deep waters there about creation and co-creating and how much of that we have power of in our life. Over the last few weeks, we've talked about creativity in various different respects and looking at our life in a way that it can be lived creatively, not where it is that you have to be producing any particular thing, but that it's really an approach to the way you solve problems in your life or manifest and seek new employment or find relationships. But I feel like what you're sharing is even a step deeper than that. It's a step deeper into the mystery of co-creation, the thoughts that are behind what we are living each and every day.
Yeah, it's kind of peculiar, and you're not supposed to use it this way.
Okay,
like Buddhism, I've been doing this research on there's a lot of different approaches to the Dharma. When they say Buddhism, they mean people who are practicing the path that Buddha communicated. And the way, like, mainline, the way it's genuinely expressed, like within the Dharma, it's about leaving the world. It's like not being caught up in the cycle of illusion and rebirth. You're genuinely, like, bailing. In the most beautiful way.
Right.
Not getting suckered into this. And then there's another approach where they're saying we want to uplift the world. We want all the beings to be able to be free, to experience their most perfectly pure nature. So in that sense, we say, oh, there is this shared world that we're co-creating. And curiously enough, you know, at different amazing turning points in my life, there's been these Vipassana 10-day retreats. Mm-hmm. Or these retreats where I've gone off with other spiritual masters from the Tibetan lineage, and you go really deep and we're really focused on practice, and it seems like we're not doing anything, you know, genuinely. Right. Like letting go of the ego, letting go of the personal agenda. But then when I come back from those retreats, major things have shifted in the life. And whole new avenues, whole new directions have opened. It's like the big mystery. When I'm going to get stuff done, and I'm going to work and I get stuff done, then it almost seems like it becomes more predictable. But when I'm really stop, you know, letting go, letting be, just being with on a very, very deep way, then the life comes forth. Okay, example. I'm getting very abstract. Yeah. Here's an example.
Examples are good.
What do you want to be when you grow up? This was always the question. And that's the biggest kind of like, oh, what am I going to be? Who am I going to be? What am I going to make of myself? And I genuinely had to get to a very deep place of, I don't know. I don't know, and I'm not even looking to know. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Until, and then it shows up. Then, like, Chinese medicine just rolls out in front of me. Hello, here we are. And when I go back even further into my childhood and I think, you know, I had no contact with it. It wasn't part of my upbringing
mm-hmm.
in this life. But there were certain signs, there were certain threads that were like sparkles. When it showed up, there was just like, you know, like a little extra energy there when I look back.
Right.
Like, that's what some, there was some channel, there was some way to go with that, that Rupert Sheldrake would call the morphic resonance. There is a field of morphic resonance. Once a record is broken, there's like in athletics, it reaches a certain threshold and everyone can hit that. All the great athletes can hit that. And then extraordinary, and it stays that way. It plateaus when you look at the records of, you know, physical activity, physical accomplishment in athletics.
Mm-hmm.
Then it gets broken and then a bunch of people can break it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like it takes that first regrooving to get it past, you know, where you think it's possible.
Right.
That was one of his examples of morphic resonance.
Mm-hmm.
And that tracks back to my example of genuinely doing nothing, letting it all go, letting it all flow, to really listen. A great pillar of love and creativity in our community, David Sutherland, Dragon Boy,
mm-hmm.
on his camper van and all around, he would plaster, listen. I'm like, what's he on about? It's that deep kind of quiet, listen. It's inside you.
Mm-hmm.
But we're too noisy, we're too bouncing around to, like, you know, notice. And in the case of Chinese medicine, it was totally beating me over the head. I was like, you know, okay, I don't know. I don't want to know. And I'm like, finally, it's really showing up. Then you go, okay, yeah, there's something there. I got to finally go with the signs and go with the opening. Mm-hmm. And that way, too, can open for you.
And you, and you, and you.
And you.
So you said about slowing down and doing nothing and allowing to let flow what is going to flow. So any insights there on doing nothing? Because as simple as it sounds, it's not so simple, I think, in the culture, the American United States culture we live in.
That helped. I went and I experienced the culture in India. And there's many different cultures in India. I went to North India and, you know, was able to get close with the Indian people, have friends, you know, that are still, I consider friends, and the Tibetan people and the Ladakhi people. Ladakh is the northernmost region of India, which was Tibetan and holds that Tibetan culture, but was never invaded when China invaded. So remains kind of like this intact bit of the ancient Tibetan culture. But it's Ladakhi. It's its own flavor. And while I was up there, I was like searching, where's the wise man? You know, who can I study with? Who's going to help me with this insight, you know, and develop? And then this wonderful Ladakhi man, you know, kind of fit in the bill. He looks the wise elder. I went to him and he's like, what to do in the life? And he said to me, your behavior should be like pig or dog. I was like, okay. I should wallow around in the mud and like just sniff around? No, he was like, my dog can genuinely like do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
He demonstrates it, and he then from that nothing, he's just totally ready to love everybody. My dog Bodhi, he is a dog celebrated in song. My fully enlightened canine Bodhi demonstrates how to do nothing, but from a completely loving place. He's mm-hmm. all just anytime, any point, you know, I'm ready to give love.
Right.
But of course, you know, like I have some training in Zen, and then their type of meditation, they call it Shikantaza, only just sit. So there isn't any project, there isn't any activity. When you're sitting meditation with Zen, you're just there. So that was a big wake up
mm-hmm.
from my excessively ambitious and driven, you know, early adulthood.
Mm-hmm. So to go back to the story that you were sharing about either being the dog or the pig. So I understand the comparison to the dog. So learning from the dog in terms of its ease at just being and then being open to giving love and receiving love. But what is the pig association?
It's similar. I think they're putting them together, just
mm-hmm.
like animal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for us. We don't have so much contact with
right.
the animal world. But the Indian hold the cow sacred. Mm-hmm. So anywhere around the busy, busy city, you can see cow relatively doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And giving off kind of like this animal, happy, content. I mean, they're considered sacred. They're like safe.
Right.
Wherever they go. And so it's like this reminder. They just give off that like, I'm happy. I'm mm-hmm. a cow. I'm not doing anything.
Right. But being a cow.
And being holy.
And being holy.
I had the karma to not be reborn in America.
Mm-hmm.
Cow is food.
Mm-hmm.
India, cow is revered. Mm-hmm. Sacred animal. You get the milk from the cow. But
right. How are pigs viewed in India?
They probably don't have that same kind of coverage.
I don't think so.
But there were some pretty happy pigs. They were running around. They're raising right. their kids. It's that feeling of contentedness with what you got.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of that relaxation that animals can give. That I think my Ladakhi wise man was alluding to.
Mm-hmm.
And it must be like that because it hit me just so oblique. I was like, 25 years ago, I still remember it. You know,
right.
trying to figure out, what did he mean by that?
Right. Here you are.
Your behavior should be like pig or dog.
All right. You heard it here. Love in the 21st century. KZFR, Adam Mose, talking about love and creativity. Be like the pig or the dog or possibly any other animal that brings you contentment and happiness. That's the goal, to just be. So talking about love and creativity, Adam, what else do we got?
We got the Burning Man phenomena. Yeah. So you're hearing this on the radio now because you are not probably out with 70,000 other smelly hippies on the playa.
Mm-hmm.
But you've been.
Yes.
And I'm, I guess you'd say, a burner, you know.
Right.
Have done it a couple times.
Right.
More than a handful of times.
Mm-hmm.
And can genuinely say that it was an important catalyst
mm-hmm.
for putting the creativity back into the life.
Beautiful. So we're going to take a short break here, and we're going to get into the conversation of love and creativity with our focus on Burning Man. I'm sure it's going to be quite the exciting conversation. If you want to tune in and make a comment, give us a call at 895-1114. That will get you on the air. 895-1114. Welcome back to Love in the 21st Century. We are talking about love and creativity. This is Tamara Wickma with Adam Mose. And we are about to begin our conversation on the burn. If you want to join our conversation, dial 895-1114. All right. Here we are. You got three mics facing you. Pretty impressive.
Try sound.
Yes. So, right. Would you like to share again what you were talking about in terms of Burning Man being bringing creativity back into life?
Yeah, there was a little background on my personal involvement and lack of involvement, because I had heard about it. People had gone, lots of friends had gone there telling me, oh, you're going to love it. You got to go. And I was like, oh, no, I'm a rainbow. I identified myself with going to the rainbow gatherings. And we always gather out in a different national forest. And it seemed like the Burning Man had borrowed a lot of stuff from the rainbow, the idea of a gift economy, the welcome home, that feeling of the inclusiveness, all of that is from the rainbow, going back to the early 70s. And then you get to be out in nature, too. It's like I kept hearing, oh, the desert is trying to kill you all the time, and you have to go out very much prepared, to endure some of that. Harsh changes in weather, sudden changes in weather. And we were at the Wyoming Rainbow Gathering, and I met a guy out there who was like, oh, you got to come to the Burning Man. You'll see. It's like the rainbow, but in the desert, and we're making things. And so there was this thing how in the rainbow family of living light, it's very much like the food is the focus, and helping people and serving people with delicious meals. You want to cook, everyone's cooking out there and serving up the grub. So the music is all organic and acoustic. It's live. I started "'Twas brillig in the slithy toves, did gyre and gimble in the wave. All mimsy were the burrogroves and the muskrats out gray. Beware the jabberwock, my son, the claws that bite. The teeth that bite, the claws that catch. Beware the jub-jub bird and shun the frumious bandersnatch." Started off with that one. It's like, okay, yeah, you got to come to Burning Man. Bring it. And the first bit of creativity, like before I ever got out there, was the research on the difficulties of the playa environment. And people were like, oh, if you go out there with a tent, the dust gets in, the tent blows over. There's all these, I started to piece it together and learn, how to make it comfortable, because I was going to take my whole family. My wife and my daughters went the first time. So a hexayurt was the invention this brother came up with and open sourced it. He made it available free online, the plans for building this rigid, structured tent-like thing. It's a yurt, it's a hexagon, it's a hexayurt. And it turns out it's like the perfect playa domicile. So putting that together and figuring out how to get it out there in one piece on the top of my Mercedes sedan and then setting it up, that was just like, doing that the first year opened up this whole wonderful feeling. It's like I literally just built the house that my family is going to live in for a week, my own hands, that feeling. Mm-hmm. And it turned out to be very adequate. you know, for giving you shelter from the wind. You need a hard-sided structure. Then all of the art, the idea that art is something participatory and something interactive, that one person doesn't have to just do their art alone, that when you put the energy of artists together, it goes up exponentially. Mm-hmm. And around that same time, I was introduced in my research to this Göbekli Tepe, which is the most important archaeological dig, archaeological discovery that you've never heard of. Mm. You know, it's because it requires the rewriting of a lot of textbooks and almost perhaps a rethinking of the basis of our human society. Göbekli Tepe is this site on the border of Turkey and Syria where ancient peoples were quarrying blocks and carving on them and putting them in circles. You know, they were building, it's like a Stonehenge, but it's got carvings on it, you know, beautiful shapes. And this is obviously a lizard. This is obviously a bird, you know. And then when they did the dating on it, it turned out to be 14,000 years ago. So from us to the building of the pyramids, mm-hmm. back, you know, it's pyramids are in the middle. Göbekli Tepe is before. So it was like, they dug around, they couldn't find any village. There wasn't the signs of human habitation there for long term. Why? Because it was before agriculture. They were still hunter-gatherers who would gather, you know, there. This is the theory. This is the current theory. More excavation has to be done if it's not a war zone. It's in a sensitive area now. But it looked like from the dawn of human history, getting together and making art, you know, it was part of their religion. It wasn't, you know, just art for art's sake. It had this spiritual significance for them. Generation after generation, they would gather and build this site collectively. Even when they're not living there, they go on and keep doing their nomadic things the rest of the year, hunting, gathering. That was at around the same time I discovered Burning Man, and I was like, okay, yeah, why does this feel so good? Mm-hmm. Because it's kind of like what we're biologically about, getting together, making art, being a tribe, being beloveds, you know, finding the commonalities and letting the love flow.
Would you mind for our listeners kind of explaining what Rainbow is and what Burning Man is?
Mm-hmm. The Rainbow is one of the longest running experiments in anarchist living. It's the pacifist anarchist revolution in action, where we get together on a different national forest. And last year it was out in Dakota. And next year, 2017, it's going to be in Oregon. That's right. Very close to us. And there's a prayer for peace. We celebrate July 4th as our Declaration of Interdependence Day. We recognize all of our interdependence. Mm-hmm. And from sun up to noon is all in silence. Mm-hmm. And folks gather around in the main meadow and hold the space for a prayer for peace to any particular deity or lack thereof that you would like to pray or not pray to. We just, it's all inclusive. Mm-hmm. If you have a belly button, then you're a rainbow and you're welcome. And so the energy is just amazing. You know, 20, 30,000 people in silence, all just praying for peace.
How many people?
It varies from year to year. I think in the Oregon is going to be quite big. Mm-hmm. The West Coast ones are quite big.
Mm-hmm.
Because the land is bigger and we can hold more folks.
Right.
But it's all free. It's all open. That's the amazing thing. There's no organization. There's no one in charge. There's a council that decides, and they got a lot from the Occupy movement.
Mm-hmm.
There was a rainbow council ever since there was a rainbow, but it works by consensus.
Mm-hmm.
When we want to decide something, everyone has to decide. If there's a no, then they have the floor.
Mm-hmm.
As long as there's a no, then it doesn't go. So a lot of times, like the way we're deciding stuff can take 3 days.
Right.
And we get to hear about everyone's sad childhood. You know, anyone can say anything at the council. And it's changed a little bit. I haven't been at the council, you know, for a number of years, but I was at some Occupy councils.
Mm-hmm.
And they know how to move it, you know, that they have a way of dealing with no's or bringing no's in, you know, in a way that's more timely.
Mm-hmm.
So decisions are able to be made on a consensus basis. It's like true democracy, you know.
Absolutely.
Every voice. And if you want to sit on the council, you want to attend, it's open.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's your, you want to be part of the leadership, then you're part of the leadership.
Mm-hmm.
But the Burning Man developed, as I understand it, you know, the research, I wasn't involved, but with the Baker Beach, they have an art piece that went out there and that they burned and made it an annual event, and it got big, and people would come and burn different big wooden sculptures of a man.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it became more organized, and there was a nonprofit, you know, different leaderships stepped up to be organizing it. It's it's different. We used to think, you know, oh, they get harassed a lot less from the police because they pay for their land. You know, they rent it from the BLM.
Mm-hmm.
The playa itself is BLM land. And then, you know, they get a use permit. They do all this sort of stuff that the rainbows don't. But the Burning Man, because it's, you know, so picturesque, it's so beautiful. Anytime you go there, you're just like, It's like being in a piece of art.
Mm-hmm.
The playa itself is the canvas on which the artists bring these monumental works of art that are meant to be interactive. You climb on them. You have to power them with your muscle power, you know, or you stand back from at a proper distance and they blow up gloriously at night or in the early morning. And so it's been growing quite, you know, quite a lot, and haven't gone last couple of years because tickets are hard. It's like a thing, you know, you can't just show up because you have to bring all your own water, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But for just the sheer raw creativity and the expansiveness, the feeling, you know, anything's possible. You go out there and you just don't know what is going to come next to blow your mind. The way that it integrates in the life when I come back is like just looking at things differently, looking at things from an artistic or even an engineering point of view. It's like the way that people are able to manifest things, like massive temples, mm-hmm. a temple complex. You know, it took this huge crew worked on this stuff for months and months and months to bring it out there, and so that other people have an experience when they go into that space. The man burn is Saturday night and the peak of the party in a way, and then the temple burn is Sunday night and brings the spiritual dimension, the place where we put our dearly departed. People put their names and the pictures of the folks they've lost that year, mm-hmm. and in the burning of it, there's a beautiful cathartic, you know, release.
Do you happen to know what the symbology is behind the burning of the man specifically?
I have my own, and that's my Series? Own. Yeah, I have my own idea. There was different stories I heard, you know, about why originally Larry Page came out there with a man to burn, but. Just, you know, being very to the point and pragmatic, I think about how most of what, you know, when we think about the developments of the Enlightenment, the Renaissance, which is the theme this year, they have a different theme, a general theme that they're approaching. And this year it's about the Renaissance and Leonardo and all this. But the... putting man back at the center of the universe, that the human experience, you know, being able to come to terms with that and to find the beauty to make it uplifting, then that's one idea, you know, why it's a man. We're mm-hmm. But, you know, from my vantage point of India, a couple of years ago, there's this thing called Mela in India. When they're going to have a good time, it's around a spiritual function. Mm-hmm. The Kumbh Mela is every 4 years, and the Maha Kumbh Mela is every 12 years. And it is the biggest gathering of humans on the planet.
Wow.
Really, really massive. Millions and millions of people make the pilgrimage to attend the Kumbh Mela. And it's about taking a dip in the river. They're always on the banks of a river. There's the Ganges. There's a certain time when the planets align, and they're like, now's the day for the holy dip, and all the holy men go into the water, and bam, it's something.
Mm-hmm.
So the Mela idea means there's a focus, but it's the energy, the shared experience.
Right.
And I was like, okay, big deal. I saw a man burn. And the day afterwards, I was at center camp and bumped into Mike Wolfchuk, who is a amazing drummer, percussionist, cornerstone of musical creativity. In Chico, founding mm-hmm. drummer for the Mother Hips, etc. And I was chanting to him. You know, he had seen many, many burns. That had been his thing for a lot of years. And I was just like, you know, kind of talking with him. And then all of a sudden I'm crying. I'm like, what the heck? And I just realized, okay, I had just experienced something with 50,000 people last night. Everyone, you know, we all have our own experiences. We all have our own reasons and functions and learnings that we're having there. But at that particular moment, when the man went, we were all there. So that was something.
Mm-hmm.
And just that, I was like, wow, that was something. And I didn't think it was anything.
Mm-hmm.
But then in retrospect, it's like, wow, yeah, that was...
pivotal experience.
Something changed.
Not quite sure what, but something did.
Right.
Right. For 50,000 people.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I would share that I had a similar experience watching the man burn. I guess thinking of my own theory around the man being burned, I think about the cultural influences that the symbol of the man has in the United States culture. Mm. And so I think of it, the symbology being connected to releasing that, releasing ourselves to that, because of the 10 principles that Burning Man subscribes itself to, and the people who attend as well. And I don't know that we necessarily have time to go through them all, but radical self-expression is definitely one of those.
Yeah.
And that is the most, I think, amazing part of the attendance of Burning Man, is that everyone is there to create their own reality. They are all there either participating in what somebody else has created, spent months, years creating, as well as to experience it in the moment, in each moment that they're there, because mm-hmm. there's interactive experiences, not only the art in its creation that comes there, but the art that's created while there, the shared experiences that people have. So it's really, in my experience, almost like an alternate universe. If there's not really any other place that exists quite like it.
It's an alternate universe of alternative universes.
Yes.
And here's a fun one from my last burn. I'm walking along. It's not even out in the main part of the playa. We're just kind of in the camps. I'm walking along, and there's a film noir detective set on the desert, mm-hmm. with the window and the desk, and this lady, she's dressed up like a hard-boiled detective, you know, Sam Spade movie from the 30s. There's antiques and everything. It looks like, you know, I've just entered a movie set. And she's like, you know, can I help you? And I was like, yes, I'd like to report a missing person. And immediately I was like, okay, play with it, go with it. You know, I've never been on a detective set before, but here we are. And this lady is already playing the hard-boiled detective.
Right.
She takes out her pad and she's, okay, can you describe this? What are you talking about? And I was saying that I had misplaced my inhibitions. Mm-hmm. I had them, and she's like, okay, and when did you notice that your inhibitions were missing? And I was like, well, I was at this Ella Nero concert, and then the Polish ambassador started dropping these funky polka beats, and I started dancing like a ninja. And she's like, that's exactly it. That's him. How did you feel at that point? And I was like, I felt pretty darn good. So it's all right that these inhibitions are missing at this point? I say, I guess I'd have to say so. She's like, okay, that's the end of the case. Case is solved. And I walk on to the next scene, the next crazy scene. Brilliant crazy.
All about creating one's personal experience, altered universe or not. And like you said, alternate universes of alternate universes of alternate universes. It's just an endless playground and quite the experience. If you're unfamiliar with either Burning Man or the Rainbow Gathering, I suggest, if you have internet access, checking it out. They're pretty easy to find, the pictures, and to learn a bit more about this subculture that exists in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we are winding down here on our conversation on love and creativity. Adam, do you have some last things you want to share with us?
You're starring in your life. You are the star of your life. So just lift off, light up inside your intelligent heart. the green light of accomplished action, the white safe light, the blue healing light, the golden light of understanding, the red light of life, eternal. Under the colors of this world time, we are on this ship together. We're all on board the same ship. We're riding upon the sunship Earth, the arc of many worlds, many views, many worldviews. That's all I'm saying.
You are the star of your own life. Light up. And stay tuned for Ecotopia coming up next, Tuesdays from 6 to 7. Stephen and Susan Chudy, as they discuss environmental issues with nationally renowned authors and activists. EcoTalk, it's your local link to a global network of folks who know and care about the health of our planet. Stay tuned for us next week. Next Tuesday, we're going to talk with the women that are organizing the Weaving Women's Wisdom Gathering, another way to gather and to express one's creativity. So that will be a thought-provoking conversation. That's next Tuesday.
And also, we're doing the Making Men's Magic.
Oh,
at
nice.
At the same time, there's a men's gathering and a, let's see, if you Facebook me, Adam nice. Mose, you can get an invite or get the details on the...
Nice.
The men are trying to step up. The women are way ahead, but we're...
You're not too far behind, though.
We got to bring some magic back.
Making Men's Magic.
It's a wilderness experience.
A wilderness experience. It sounds captivating already. Okay, thank you so much. And we will be with you next week.
Hey guys, Will Durst here with a few choice words concerning Donald Trump's recent attempt to appear more presidential by slightly softening his position of shooting undocumented immigrants on sight. Lately, he seems to be almost kind of sort of nearly becoming semi-reasonable. But even the fluffiest down-filled Donald Trump could still poke huge holes in our democracy without swinging his elbows very wide. The commander-in-chief gets to command, chiefly plotting not just the direction of the ship of state, but also staffing the helm and determining who gets to work in the ship's laundry. With victory comes the spoils, and that includes picking a cabinet, judges, and over 300 other appointments that don't require Senate approval, including commission heads, council members, foundation flunkies, national park eagle wranglers, theme park roller coaster rail greasers, swan boat concession sommeliers, and employees at shoeshine kiosks in federally funded transportation hubs. So based on his experience in the public spotlight, thus far, here's an educated guess as to who President Trump might pick. Judge Judy, Surgeon General.